Possible in part by Ratio Architects, designers and planners, dedicated to distinctive projects for community, life sciences, and workplace clients. On the web at www.ratioarchitects.com. Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the world premiere of The End of Cinematics, an extrasensory film experience by Michael Rouse, with live music, multiple screens, and surround sound. For more information, visit KrannertCenter.com.
Welcome to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason, your host for this next 45-minute segment as we talk about the Farm Bill. We're coming to you from the Farm Progress Show today in Decatur, Illinois, the 2005 edition. Joining me on stage here is Chip Conley, who is with the House Committee on Agriculture, advising the Democrats on that side. Otto Doering with Purdue University, an ag economist, and University of Illinois ag economist Bob Hauser. We'll start the program with this. If you could highlight for me some opening comments, just what the Farm Bill is and how it may change as legislation is introduced in the next couple of years to create what farmers will be dealing with over the next 5 years.
Certainly, Todd. As probably your audience knows, we write a farm bill every 4, 5, 7 years as it's been sort of revolving through Congress. The current one expires with the end of the 2007 crops. We will be writing a new farm bill to go beyond that. All the other programs expire at the end of fiscal 2007. Like past farm bills, it will certainly focus on supply and demand issues and on farm income issues. Like farm bills since 1981, it will have a strong budget component. Congress will likely have to cut farm spending, I would think, as we're beginning to do this year. And then we're going to introduce the new element of our World Trade Organization trade obligations as a new firm criteria that we will have to be in compliance with as we produce legislation that will provide the policy parameters that farmers will run their operations under for the next 4, 5, 6, 7 years.
Chip Conley is the Democrat advisor to the Democrats on the House Committee on Agriculture. Otto Doering, you have some opening comments from Purdue University?
Yes, they're not really from Purdue, they're from me. Purdue takes no responsibility for anything I say.
I understand.
I think two things about the Farm Bill. One, you have to realize the Farm Bill has a lot of big pieces. You know, half the money basically goes for the food programs, the food stamps, the WIC program, these kinds of things. Part of the Farm Bill that relates directly to farmers is not only the section on commodity programs, but also the conservation titles, the conservation programs. And of course, one of the things we're going to be facing as you start cutting budgets is the whole idea of among these various aspects of the Farm Bill, which ox gets gored. And that's going to be a very definite political trade-off. But I think the last thing to realize is that the farm economy doesn't just relate to farm bills. And there are other things going on that relate to the budget deficit that may be more important. The farm financial crisis in the late 80s was a product of Paul Volcker stomping on interest rates and getting interest rates up to 18% when farmers had bad balance sheets. We've got a trade deficit and a budget deficit, which combined are the largest we've ever had. And this is something for the long term that may be more important to farmers than the Farm Bill itself.
Otto Doering is with Purdue University, and Bob Hauser is with the University of Illinois. Welcome, Bob. Do you have some opening comments?
Let me just make a couple points about the current one, and especially from the recipient side. Producer side, and I want to note that at least with respect to the income support programs, we are the beneficiaries of one of the most generous income support programs we've had in decades, according to our work. Depending on the metrics you use, the level of support, even excluding the insurance programs, is at a all-time high. You've got to be a little bit careful on how you measure these things because so much of the expenditures depend on price levels at the time. But if you do it in any sort of expected framework under reasonable price expectations, you really are dealing right now with a very generous program. That will likely change. The second point I'd like to make is we really need to be thinking about what we're trying to do during the next Farm Bill, especially from a safety net standpoint when you're talking about income support. And one of the most important issues related to that is who is actually protected against risk and helped in terms of higher income. We can talk more about that later, but a lot of that depends, of course, on whether you are a tenant or a landowner.
Chip, Bob Hauser referenced all-time highs for spending on agricultural commodities. Do you have a way to tell us, as an ag economist, a number cruncher, what that actually means, what kind of dollars we're talking about?
Well, actually, I think our peak expenditures occurred, I want to say, fiscal year 2000, when we had about $30 billion, which has been an all-time high. That had the unusual occurrence of providing market loss assistance to two crop years in that one fiscal year. So it's a bit anomalous, but still, that's where the record stands. We added money in the 2002 Farm Bill to basically reflect the ad hoc emergency market loss assistance spending that we had been doing for the previous four years. So we made that part of the permanent agricultural policy for that year, for that bill, rather than one that was considered on an annual basis. While I think we probably have supply and demand fairly well in balance, we've decoupled some of our direct payments, our countercyclical payments, so that they are not, you don't have to plant specific crops or crops at all in order to get those payments, so we haven't been encouraging farmers to overproduce nearly as much.
Some of our listening audience will not know the parlance from which we speak. Could you explain some of these direct payments, the countercyclical payments, loan deficiency payments? What in general might those payments mean to producers here in the state of Illinois, the state of Indiana, where corn and soybean would be the primary recipients?
Well, they're all dollars in their pocket, of course. The direct payments and the countercyclical payments are broken off, are divided between the difference of the loan rate and the target price, which farmers growing corn and wheat should be familiar with, and soybeans as well. The direct payment is fixed. So many cents per bushel times a program yield for every acre a farmer has crop base for. If you're operating, you're familiar with those terms. The countercyclical payment is the part that varies with whatever the market price is. And this was in response to sharply falling prices that began in 1998. This is in lieu of the market loss payments that Congress provided on an annual basis for 4 years. And then the loan deficiency payment is based on the loan rate, which each of corn, soybeans, wheat also have. And it's basically the difference between the loan rate and the market price on that day as determined by USDA as a posted county price. Producers can accept that in lieu of putting their grain under loan.
In short, if I could, it's a transfer of wealth, taxpayer dollars, from taxpayers, the government, to farmers.
Exactly.
All right. That's the short answer, and there are many ways to go about
doing that.
Otto, you suggested that this bill would have a much broader impact than the simple farm economy in the coming years. What did you mean?
Well, I think I'll start off really, in a sense, reversing that, saying that there's some broad things in the economy that can affect farmers almost more than the Farm Bill. And if we see interest rates go up rather quickly, this hurts small businesses, this hurts farmers, this hurts the economy as a whole. And I think many economists are amazed that with the fiscal deficit we have, plus the trade deficit, that we have not seen much higher interest rates. And the farm financial crisis in the late 80s was really a product of overextension by the farm community in terms of land purchases and these kinds of things, plus all of a sudden the imposition of tremendously high interest rates. And the interesting thing is you go back in history in terms of farm bills, and you find people like Chester Davis, who worked for Henry A. Wallace in the 30s, saying government policy for farmers is not just farm bills. It's tax policy. It's interest rate policy. It's trade policy. And the reference that's already been made to how we deal with the rules of the Doha Round, these things may be more important than the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill tries to sort of set some kind of equilibrium so that farmers have some sense of being able to stay in business over a longer term. But you get a massive economic shock that affects often the whole country, and everyone's in trouble, irrespective of farm programs.
Chip, you have the distinct pleasure, I believe, for your Democratic members of delivering the bad news to associations like the cotton growers, the rice growers, the corn growers, the soybean association about the farm bill, because you do all the number crunching. In your opinion, economically speaking, what's the bad news about the 2007 farm bill?
Yes, Todd, that's right. I think the thing that I try to make people aware of that is not immediately apparent in the discussions and public policy that go around is that we are probably facing a much bigger budget deficit than people realize. The President and Congress this year set out the objective to cut the deficit in half over 5 years from 2004 to 2009. And indeed, absent the budget, that would look like it was going to happen. But the budget that they proposed and Congress subsequently passed stays within that parameter, but it does two things and omits a few things that will greatly affect the 10-year rather than the 5-year deficit. They extend the tax cuts of 2001 and 2003, which would otherwise expire after 2010, and that will add, according to CBO, the Congressional Budget Office that calculates budget numbers for Congress, about $1.8 trillion to the 10-year deficit. They omit the funding of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. CBO, because that has been done on an annual supplementary basis, so the Congressional Budget Office, as under the rules by which they must form baseline projections, has omitted that in their baseline. That would add, under some scenarios, drawing troops down after 2006 and then maintaining some presence for the war on terror, add another $500 billion over 10 years. And then finally, there's the alternative minimum tax, which was not proposed in either budget. This is something that's more Americans will start to feel because it's not indexed for inflation like the regular tax code, but to address that would add about another $500 plus billion as well. When you add all that up, the 10-year budget of what we will likely be facing is about $3.8 trillion, and it's about $2.8 trillion higher than what has been forecast in the baseline by CBO, absent these non-included elements I just mentioned.
Given that, how big must the cuts be in agriculture? I know they can't be that big by any means.
Correct. Perhaps the most useful way is to compare it to a budget resolution that the House of Representatives passed for the 2004 budget. In that year, they wanted to pass some tax cuts, about $700 billion. To do so, they had budget cuts proposed in their budget that would be assigned to committees, about $260 billion, about $19 billion of which would go to the Agriculture Committee. That was about $1.9 billion a year for 10 years. To get back to the same level of deficit that they had in that budget, it would take about a $2.8 trillion reduction in spending, as opposed to the $260 billion, about 11 times greater. Agriculture was 7% of that budget. If it was 7% of a $2.8 trillion spending cut, it would be in the magnitude of about $200 billion. And that would be approximately 45% or so of the farm bill that was passed in 2002. Now, I don't mean to suggest we're going to do this in 2007, but I think agriculture is going to remain under the kind of deficit reduction pressure, the kind of grinding every other year reduction in farm spending that we were between 1981 and 1995.
Some interesting thoughts and a lot of numbers to crunch through. But I suppose, all in all, what it sounds to me like is that from the left, the Democratic side, and the Democratic side in this case, that they're in what appears to be, and he's delivering bad news, unusually bad news, which would be against the Bush administration from the right side. But the Bush administration's talking very much the same sort of policy types of numbers about agriculture, that cuts have to be made. And the question is just where, and then how will they continue to support agriculture in the future? So Secretary Johans on the grounds of the Farm Progress Show this afternoon from 1 to 4 talking about farm bill at a farm bill forum. The Bush administration has been saying now for a month or a month and a half that they will present a farm bill, and that it looks, from all indications, that that farm bill will be maybe different, more conservation-oriented, and certainly that they're focusing on one of the values that farmers are concerned about, land values, and that land values need to come down. So the way this all works together is if you want to keep land values in line to make the United States competitive, that farm payments, which are part of the now land value, because many farmers base what they pay for land and landowners on those farm payments that they'll reap from Washington, they have to be cut. So the question is, how does that all happen, Otto? And am I right? I mean, am I partly right?
The answer is with great pain. and I will talk while Bob thinks here
okay.
on this one. First of all, there are two things going on. One is you look at the potential for large budget cuts and you think, how might they be accomplished? And you can parse that money out, okay, in whatever way you want. The second thing that's going on is the politics of it. And what has happened over the last several farm bills is that the Aggies, in the olden days, it was both the Democrats and the Republicans. Their common bond was agriculture, and between them they would go against the leadership of the House and the Senate. After the 94 Farm Bill, there's been a greater partisan split between the Republicans and the Democrats, and in a sense the Aggies may not hold together as agricultural interests as much as they did in the past. This is probably a negative for agriculture, very frankly. That the partisan split has done this. But as long as the Aggies hang together, I have been amazed at the resiliency they have had in terms of capturing money, particularly for the farm programs, in the budget process and getting the money they wanted. You have to remember, with the 2002 bill, there was CHIP $73-74 billion.
That's correct.
That was the surplus money that got allocated probably at 4 a.m. To agriculture. Agriculture and defense were the only two groups that got this extra money. And part of our ability to spend under the current farm program has depended on this extra surplus money that came in. Last thing you mentioned, and now Bob has had enough time to think that he can deal with this,
okay.
Is the whole business of the relationship between farm programs and land values. And if you want to ask what ag economists have nightmares about, that's one of the things. This whole tie between land values and commodity payments, that in essence, the transfer that the public makes to farmers, that from the public's perception, they want to go to help keep the farmer on the land. A big hunk of that is going to increasing land values, which the farmer may or may not own that land. We're seeing an increase in tenancy and people farming who don't own their land. This is a tough one, and I'll let Bob solve it.
Okay.
Tell me about your nightmare, Bob.
No, it's not a nightmare. Let's. What we do know is that the land market is very efficient. It will build into its price factors that make that land worth owning. Now, if we step back and just look at the rent side, it's a little bit easier to think about things. You know, if farm programs are such that they cause on average $30, $40, $50 per acre to be accrued that would not be accrued without the farm program, your rents are going to increase, obviously. Those rents will basically go to a level that leaves the farmer with the expectation, anyway, of a reasonable profit, okay? When those payments go away, the rents will go down accordingly. There's little doubt about that. Now, what does that do to our competitiveness? Well, to be honest with you, my view is that the U.S. will be competitive, but it will depend much less on whether those rents are moving from 150 to 200 or from 200 to 170 than whether the markets are open, whether the trade is available for our products that we grow. That will cause competitive effects that I think are much greater than the effect of rents going up or down in response to farm bill payments.
Otto, I'd like to follow up on this scenario a bit with you. What do you deal with in terms of the banking industry and land that's owned and the value of land then? Is there concern within the agricultural industry, within the banking industry, in the halls of government maybe even, that if farm payments are cut drastically or some, that there may be a domino effect along the way?
The answer is yes, the not really apocryphal story that I like to tell is at the time of the farm financial crisis in the late 80s, I used to visit with the North Central Federal Reserve agricultural bankers every summer. And in the late 80s, land prices had really collapsed, as you know. Land, poor and medium quality land that had sold for $2,500 was back to $1,200. And I got up in front of this group of bankers and I said, the one thing you have to do is prevent those land prices from going back up again. And all the pacemakers turned on. Because what happened was they had loaned money to farmers on that appreciated value of the land rather than loaning on the ability to repay the income stream. And I think the banking industry learned. And if you look at balance sheets now, we're in a better situation than we were in the 80s. And I think bankers are much more cognizant today of loaning on the ability to repay. They are not going to be happy with a cut in commodity payments because one of the things there is that hurts the ability to repay to some extent. But the banking and the Agricultural Committee of the American Banking Association is probably as strong or stronger supporter of continuing commodity payments or even increasing them a little bit as anyone else.
Okay, so we've delved a couple places. It appears the Bush administration would like cuts in what's happening with the Farm Bill the next time around. The Democrat, the economic advisor to the Ag House, Democrats on the House Committee of Agriculture, is telling a similar story that cuts probably need to be made. One of the supporting things may have been that the banking industry might not handle that so well. You're telling me that the banking industry learned from the last time around. So as we look at it then, those are three strikes against the current farm bill. So how does the next farm bill incorporate that, and how much or fewer dollars might farmers in the states of Illinois, Indiana, and other places. And we haven't talked about cotton and rice farmers, sugar, milk producers yet. What kind of cuts might they look at, and how might the Farm Bill change? How might those bills, the Bush administration has talked a lot. The only thing that made it into the last Farm Bill from the Bush administration was the Conservation Security Program. And this time around, Mike Johansson, the president, say they will put forth a Farm Bill. It's likely, I suppose, to be conservation-minded. And does that change how payments are made? And then we can talk about how that works with the WTO.
Let me suggest that we're not going to be able to tell you how the Farm Bill is going to change the next time around, but instead suggest that we spend a lot of time during the next 6 months talking about what we're trying to do. Okay? In other words, farm bills at some point in time, and they'll probably be soon, are often driven by budgets, are often driven by what we can afford as opposed to what we're trying to accomplish. Okay? My hope is that we see a lot of discussion about principles, whether we're trying to reduce risks, increase income, improve competitiveness, affect rural development, so on and so forth. Start with those premises and say, well, what if we were dealing with a clean slate here? Are we approaching it the right way under the current Farm Bill structure? Chip has to deal with these things all the time. But I suspect there's not enough time to really give careful thought and analysis to the best way of getting what we want done, as opposed to the best way to spend a particular amount of money that we think we have.
What are you telling your members we can afford?
Well, we're going to start in September with cutting $3 billion out of the Agriculture Committee's spending jurisdiction, which includes nutrition programs, conservation, trade, rural development, as well as commodity programs and crop insurance and other farm production programs.
Those are cuts that come in the current budget cycle.
That's right. We're going to have to report legislation to the Budget Committee 16th of September. The committee has not made decisions about that yet. It will go to the Budget Committee, to the floor. Congress will pass it. It will be part of other committees reporting as well. They're going to cut $34.5 billion out of total spending for the next 5 years. House and Senate will have to agree on this, and then it'll become law, and it'll begin to shape what the next Farm Bill looks like. It'll be small changes, $3 billion out of $300 billion, but I think it'll begin the process of having people look at the budget in a way they haven't had to for about 10 years now.
Structurally speaking, are you of the opinion that the current Farm Bill, the next Farm Bill, will look fairly similar to the current Farm Bill?
I think the structure will probably remain intact. I think we'll continue to have these fixed direct payments. I think we'll have variable countercyclical payments, and I think we'll have some kind of loan deficiency payment. I think what the 1996 Farm Bill, which was just direct payments, showed is that when prices fall, Congress needs to be able to respond. And I think the experience has shown is that Congress responds better if it's thought about this ahead of time rather than in the passion of the moment of trying to provide assistance.
In 1996, Farm Bill called Freedom to Farm, and the payments you're talking about are disaster assistance payments.
They were market loss
and market loss
as well.
Otto, would you have a comment?
Yeah, let me follow on, particularly with what Bob said. I guess I'm becoming more of a curmudgeon as I go through this, and Bob is saying what I would like to say, that well in advance of the bill, it would really be terribly helpful if we talked about what we wanted from a farm bill. Okay, what are our key priorities? What do we need to do? And then consider how we divide the pie. Senator Lugar tried to do this in 94-95 when he was chairman of the Senate Ag Committee and sent out a letter across the country with a group of questions that basically did that. That process was short-circuited and the Aggies ran and captured the money for the commodity programs. I would like to think that we could go ahead and do that. Have a real discussion as to what do we really want out of these programs, how much do we need to spend, where should it best be targeted. My suspicion is that what Bob's talking about won't happen again, and that what you will have is a rush to by various groups within the agricultural bill to lock up the money as soon as possible. I think, Chip, this is one reason the House is wanting to proceed ahead so quickly and move ahead with the hearings and everything else, in essence maybe sort of get their wish list sort of taken care of before everyone else gets to the store.
Certainly, commodity groups and producers have become more sophisticated in dealing with how policy is made in Washington. And they've recognized the role, in some cases, the overarching role that budget has played in this. Budgets are a good thing in that it forces people to make priorities and determine what is truly important to them. And whether we are adding money or reducing money from agriculture, it has had that effect. The politics are what you suggest. We need to have the policy debate, producers think about what it is that they need to continue their operations to be able to operate in an increasingly competitive environment. You can't always depend upon them to say, please lower my payment so I'll have lower rents and be more competitive. Sometimes that's what their elected or appointed elected officials or appointed officials have to ask the question in that way so that the answer can be derived. But then after that, as you suggested, there will be a political effort to ensure that not $1 less than can possibly be obtained will be made available for agriculture. And that will be up to the larger political considerations in the body politic of the House and the Senate as to what priorities are elevated over others. Will it be national defense? Will it be homeland security? Will it be agriculture? As you mentioned, Otto, the budget circumstances and the outlook have determined farm policy. Since 1981 through 95, when we had to do deficit reduction, farm spending has been cut. From 98 through 2002, when we had surpluses, we made market loss assistance. We provided the $73.5 billion for the 2002 Farm Bill, along with a $1.3 trillion tax cut. Now that we're back in the deficit situation again, I think the worm will have turned, and we're going to be back in the continually squeezing of the federal budget in general and agriculture in particular.
One point of clarification for those who are not familiar with Indiana. Richard Lugar is the senior senator from the state of Indiana, who Otto referenced earlier. Otto, if you had the opportunity to talk about what you might want out of a farm bill, and maybe all three of you could answer this, as economists, and I think your wants might be different than producers, but what might your wants from a farm bill be?
As public policy economists hired by Illinois and Indiana, we aren't allowed to say that. But let me go ahead anyway. I guess my feeling is, given the current budget situation, that if for no other reason than public perception and to buy continuing support for agricultural commodity programs, it has to be seen that the agricultural commodity programs are cut back to some extent. That to go out and capture, if politically the farm groups and the Aggies in Congress could go out and capture the current amount of money again, just reduplicate it, so everyone else in the budget has to cut more. That this is something that I think would hurt agriculture over the long run. I think there will be, I think by the time the Farm Bill is written, more of a perception of what the deficit situation really is, and that I think agriculture is going to have to cut. One of the attempts last time was to basically squeeze down the payment limitations. I think this will be tried again. My guess is it will fail again. This is something that is particularly hurtful to the cotton rice interests, and I think they have the political muscle to keep it from happening. From a public perception standpoint, and given that we now have every farmer's individual subsidies on the web as a matter of public record, that this cutting back on the payment limitation probably politically for agriculture would be a good thing to do. There was a plan at the time of the 2002 bill to go ahead and reduce payments by percentages over a period of time. We may be forced to do something like that. And I don't know what else you do that's going to upset, you know, that will not upset the apple cart of how people have invested over the last 5 to 10 years. And the scream will be, all of a sudden, you've taken so much from this particular area where I put investments. And I think we will back off to the cutting everyone a little bit.
Chip, touch on me for me very quickly how WTO and the negotiations that have been happening with it and will be happening parallel to Farm Bill will impact Farm Bill in Washington, D.C. And we're running within about 10 minutes of the end of our time here.
I'll try to do as brief an explanation of the WTO as maybe humanly possible.
Thank you.
Basically, the WTO is trying to negotiate down the so-called trade-distorting policies that mostly developed countries have in their agricultural sectors that cause either greater production or reduced commerce between countries, reduced trade. There's typically the market access issues. That's less of an issue for the U.S. It has some of the lowest tariffs in the world, 12% versus, on average, it's not to say there are other commodities that don't have high tariffs, versus an average of about 65% for the rest of the world. But we spend a lot of money relative to the rest of the world to support domestic production. This is the so-called amber box in agriculture. Developing countries in particular have been targeting developed country farm expenditures for reduction. And we don't know at this point how much will be an acceptable amount to reach an agreement. I should say this is just as the U.S. has been and other developed countries are targeting tariff barriers in developing countries for reduction. And this is the basic element of the trade-off in the discussion. And each side is going to have to determine what will be acceptable to get what they want on the other. I raise this because this may result in a more sudden reduction in price support levels than budgets will. We could have a trade agreement from the Doha round as early 2007. It may get dragged out to be later in the year. A complicating factor is the expiration of trade promotion authority at the end of June of 2007, but it could come just as we're trying to write a farm bill. There we may find that if we meet a budget deficit reduction target that, say, requires us to drop loan rates, just in this example, by 5%, we may find we have a trade agreement that requires us to drop them 20%, as another example. And we'll have to work out that as the requirements for reduction occur over time, both in budgets and in trade agreements, and they will have to be married into one set of legislative provisions that farmers can operate under for the next 5, 10, 20 years as the term of these agreements dictate.
Politically speaking, and maybe one of the two of you can answer this or Chip can follow up, is it possible to come up with an agreement in the WTO before Farm Bill is done that will force the hand of Congress, relatively speaking, that the administration might be able to sell as free and open trade, but go ahead and reduce Farm Bill payments and have be able to blame it on the rest of the world as opposed to something that happened in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and regardless of whether the current Doha round comes to completion before the Farm Bill gets written, the discussion itself will certainly cause folks to think about the implications within those discussions. And the U.S., you know, there are three points of discussion in general of the WTO talks. One is at the port coming in, what kind of tariffs do you put on? The other is at the port going out, what sort of subsidies or help do you have with your product? And the third is more interior, related to the subsidies and support that are going to the people producing the product. To be honest with you, the U.S. in general has only that third dimension to work with, okay? Its tariffs are low, its export subsidies are low relative to the rest of the world. So when it comes to the table and they ask, what do you have to offer, you're basically talking about that part of the three dimensions. So it could play a very, very important role in how the income support and even the conservation programs look like.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, Chip, I don't know whether you agree with this or not, I get a sense that in the last year or so and with this administration, they are more willing to go head-to-head with agricultural interests to meet the trade objective than might have been the case some years ago. In other words, they're more committed to the trade process, even if agriculture has to give that 20% or whatever else under an agreement.
I think that's a fair assessment. I think that there's the recognition, and in fact, the participation by farmers in this, that they want more open markets in the world, and they have participated in the overall trade discussion to say, we're willing to cut domestic programs to get this. Now, whether they actually decide they're happy with the final agreement is another matter, of course, but they have been involved in this in such a way that it's they have lent credibility, I think, to the administration's pursuit. Certainly in the Central American Free Trade Agreement, along with the Dominican Republic, agricultural interests were some of the biggest promoters and sponsors and supporters of that.
Just another point there. It seems to me that the administration is much more willing to go head-to-head with things like CAFTA, or more bilateral, and then that's not quite bilateral, but nation-to-nation, yeah, or region-to-region, than they are with the WTO, and that they would much prefer to deal with regions than they would with the global economy.
Well, I wouldn't characterize it as a preference. It's certainly simpler, I hesitate to use the term easier, but simpler to deal with fewer negotiating parties. We have the experience of the so-called Doha Round blowing up in Cancun, Mexico 2 years ago, because developing countries decided that developed countries weren't doing enough, and they sort of threw up their hands and walked out, leaving everyone sort of standing around wondering what had happened. And the U.S. has done a fairly good job in putting those negotiations back together, surprisingly successful in coming up with a framework agreement last summer. I think the preference is to deal with them in the multilateral round, the WTO, because there's, using the bilaterals, there's usually less that we are going to get from the countries we are dealing with. These have tended to be Western hemispherical countries, the occasional Jordan or African free trade agreement or what have you. But most of our improvements or benefits from trade agreements will come from other developing countries lowering their tariff barriers and their domestic programs, and other large domestic developing countries, whether it's China or India, or other potentially large markets for U.S. agricultural commodities, lowering their tariff barriers. Now, how much of that can be achieved in this is going to be the crux of the issue.
3 minutes left. We've got a couple of topics that I really want to cover, and we'll cover them very briefly. Will the next farm bill be debated on the white commodities to some extent at their loss, so that cotton, sugar, peanuts, if you want to call that white, and milk, and one other commodity, rice, might be the big losers in this farm bill? And maybe just a couple of words from each of you on that. And then the other one, Otto, and I'll have you address this at the end, is conservation and how that might work in. So let's, Chip, will the white commodities lose?
Well, they all present complicating issues, and they're unique to each of them. Dairy and sugar are consumer-supported commodities, so they don't have budget reduction issues, really. And it's a little different dealing with them. And it, usually the way we have dealt with them in the past through marketing assessments doesn't address their domestic support issues, as it will have to be for a WTO round that lowers domestic supports. That will be a complicating issue. Cotton and rice are another matter. Mostly the cotton issue with the Brazil case has some broad implications for other commodities. They have identified in the panel ruling that the so-called green box payments, or direct payments, may not be GATT legal or WTO legal because of the fruit and vegetable planting prohibition. That may have to be addressed. And that loan deficiency payments, the actual amount of expenditures, the WTO panel, not to oversimplify too much, said were directly responsible for low prices. This will be a problem for other commodities that make direct payments down to world price levels.
Down to 1 minute. I know you can't do a conservation that quickly, but if you could give me just a brief.
I think the key thing to recognize with conservation, we have more money in nominal dollar terms being spent on conservation right now than we did since the 1930s, although in real dollar terms it's still a lot less. I don't see how this level can be maintained. Okay, I think conservation is going to have to take some hits if everyone else is. The real question is back to politics again. How able will those who really feel strongly about the conservation efforts, how able will they be to muster the political support to try to maintain as much of the conservation budgets as possible?
Otto Dorian, thank you. We enjoyed having you here today. I had a fun discussion. Otto Dorian is with Purdue University. Chip Conley is the advisor to the Democrats on the committee on House Committee on Agriculture, and Bob Hauser is University of Illinois Ag Economist. I'm Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. That, of course, recorded this morning live at the Farm Progress Show from the University of Illinois Purdue University tent. WILL's live reports from the Farm Progress Show this week are made possible with support from ADM, Farm Credit Services of Illinois, AgriGold Hybrids, First Midwest Bank, and Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety. On the Chicago Board of Trade this afternoon, let's take a look at what happened at the close for the grains. Wheat futures were up about a nickel for the day, 306 and three quarters, the settlement price. At 306 and three quarters was the settlement price for the September contract. They were up 5 1/4. The high at 307 and a half, the low at 301 and three quarters. Dease wheat at 323 and a half high, low at 317 and a half. And a settlement price at $3.22 and a half, up a nickel for the day. March contract up 4 1/2 cents, 337 the high, the low at 331. Settlement price there up 4 1/2 for the March wheat at 336. May contract 342 and a half, the high, the low at $3.37 and a half cents, and the settlement price at 342 for the May wheat, up 4 1/2 cents. July contract at 347 and a half, high, low at 342, settlement price at 346 and a half, and they were up 4 3/4 for the day. From the corn pit, futures up about 6 cents. September contract up 6, in fact, 201 and a half, the final price for the day, the low at 201 and three quarters, and the high at 208. So they finished really close to the low, but they finished actually our low and our settlement. The settlement is actually lower than the low is, so we'll have to figure out just exactly what happened there. But that price must be somewhere in that $2 and a penny, $2.02 for the September corn futures. It was up 6 for the day. December futures 222 and a half, the high, the low at 216 and three quarters, a settlement price at 216. And 1/2 there, up 5 3/4 for the day. Again, the low and the settlement are maybe switched in this case, 216 and 3/4. I just don't know what they've got going on here. The 222 and a quarter. Oh, I see what's happening. What do we got here? The last change. Give me just a moment to see why we've got something happening here. It looks like this is the way this is rocking, and then we just have a set of numbers that's in the wrong place. Let me go back and see if I can fix this. The numbers seem to be in the wrong area. Let's go back and pick up the wheat, and we'll do just a couple contracts. September had a high of 307 and a half, a low at 301 and three quarters, and a settlement price at 306 and three quarters. They were up 5 1/4 for the day. Next year's July, 347 and a half, the high, the low at 342, settlement price at 346 and a half, up 4 3/4. SEP corn for the day, 208 the high, The low at 201 and three quarters. Now the settlement, it settled closer to this top end. I thought this should be the case. 207 and three quarters, up six and a quarter for the day. D's contract up five and three quarters, 222 and a quarter. The settlement price, the high at 22 and a half. The low at 16 and three quarters. July futures, 245, a settlement price up six and a half. And September at 251 and a quarter for next year, up seven and one quarter. Soy complex up 9 cents in the nearby September contract, 596. The high, the low at 584. Settlement price at 595 and three quarters, once again up nine. November beans were up eight and a quarter, 607. The settlement price, 608. The high, the low at 595. And the May contract, a 626 and a half high, low at 17 and a half. Settlement price at 626 and a half, up eight for the day for those May soybeans next year. Bean meal, a 184.50 settlement price. They were up 210. And the September bean oil, 22.82, and they were up 41 for the day. Now here's the folks at the studio with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Okay, Todd, let's find out what happened today on the Mercantile Exchange. Prices were lower. September feeder cattle, 111.90, the high, 109.77 and a half, the low, the settlement, 109.95, that down 182 and a half. October, 110.50, the high, 107.75, the low, the settlement, 107.87 and a half, that down 230. November, 109.60, the high, the low, 107.25, the settlement, 107.65, that down 182 and a half. October live cattle, 82.40, the high, 80.75, the low, the settlement, 81.05, that down 120. December, 85.60, the high, 84 even, the low, 84.40, the settlement, that down 110. October lean hog, 63.60, the high, 61.95, the low, 62.05, the settlement, that down 165. December lean hog, 61.25, the high, 60 even, the low, 60.52 and a half, the settlement, that down 102 and a half. February lean hog, 62 even, the high, 60.85, the low, 61.37 and a half, the settlement, that down 107 and a half. April lean hogs, 59.55, the high, 58.70, the low, the settlement, 58.90, that down 115. February bellies, 80.45, the high, 79.30, the low, and settlement, that down 177 and a half. Let's check now what's happening on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is currently down 16 points at 10,465. The NASDAQ off 3 at 2149. The S&P 500 up 2 at 1222.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Daily Farms Incorporated, Arthur; First National Bank and Trust Company, Clinton; and GCOM Incorporated, Savoy. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
Don't miss your chance to win one of a dozen fabulous prizes for your home in the WILL sweepstakes. Time's running out. Your entry must be postmarked by September 6th to win the home or garden.